with baseball set to return. Let's talk a little MLB, some Mariners. Our guest is a first-timer, covers the team for ESPN 710 in Seattle. Online, check out 710sports.com. Welcome in Brandon Gustafson. Brandon, appreciate the time. How's life treating you during these rather wild times we're living in?
Yeah, wild times is putting it a little lightly. No, it's been all right. Been working remotely for a little over 3 months now. I'm kind of used to it at this point, but we're all hanging in there.
Good to hear. So as somebody who's never been on our show yet, a little background, where do you hail from? Where did you do your undergrad work? And how long you been with ESPN 710?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Washington, small town, Bukilteo, about 20 miles north of Seattle. I went to Shoreline Community College for 2 years where I was still playing baseball, and I got my associates there. My pitching coach was Dave Snell, whose son is Blake, who won the Cy Young for the Rays 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'd finished up my 2 years at the University of Washington, and I was working at a small town newspaper for a little bit, just covering ins and outs and all that, and I've been with 710 since early November.
All right. One basic question, normally prior to a baseball season, you know, hope springs eternal, a lot of optimism after a strong 89 win 2018. Mariners got out quickly last year, then the summer was kind of a disaster. But with this kind of format, 60 games, kind of a baseball sprint, you get in a sense that, you know, that optimism is kind of running through the club, that you kind of got to throw the regular rules out the door here?
Yeah, that's the thing, like, nobody knows how this is going to go, and it's just unheard of for everybody. And with only 60 games, you can definitely get something where a certain team gets hot at the right time and they sneak their way in, when normally over 162 games, they wouldn't be doing that. I think that anybody that's a Mariners fan feels the pain of not having seen a playoff game, you know, with their team since 2001. I still don't think that that's going to change this year, even with only 60 games. But like I said, you never know what's going to happen now with only 60 games. We've just never seen this before.
You know, for the first time in 15 years, no Felix Hernandez, who's been a staple of the organization, Cy Young winner, fan favorite, you know, always pitched his guts out. So, you know, his no longer being a Mariner, how strange is that? And, you know, as somebody who grew up there, I mean, what has he meant to that franchise?
Well, when the playoff drought first started after the 2001 season, really it was like, the must-view thing was Ichiro, right? He was the guy that day in and day out you were going to watch and point to and be like, that's the guy. Once Ichiro kind of started slowing down a little bit, and after he got traded to the Yankees, Felix was that guy. And every fifth day, everybody was excited to watch him. He was must-watch TV. I mean, he had his own section at the park for all that time. I mean, it's just unheard of. It's incredible. And he meant so much to the city, and he gave everything that he had. And it was on full display that last start against the A's. It wasn't vintage Felix by any means, but it was an above average start overall, and he got 200 pitches. I think he only gave up 2 runs or so in about 6 innings, but just seeing the wave of emotion from him and the fans in the Kings Court, just the fans everywhere at T-Mobile Park, was incredible. And now noticing that Kyle Seager is kind of the lone veteran on that club, and then after him, it's like, who's the most tenured guy? Is it Marco Gonzalez, Daniel Vogelbach, Mitch Haniger? It's like those three. It's just going to be a very different looking team this year. And Felix being in a Braves uniform is a sight that I'll probably never get used to.
You know, I saw on Twitter you commented on a colleague who wrote about the impactful 4 years that Nelson Cruz spent with Seattle. You know, I know he was with the Twins last year, but man, did he produce some power numbers, 3-time All-Star. So even though he was only with the Mariners for 4 seasons, from the work he did in the community to on the field, I mean, you mentioned that maybe he made a decent case to be in the team's Hall of Fame, but those 4 years, pretty impactful.
Yeah, he was that middle of the order with him and Robinson Cano and Kyle Seager was the best middle of the lineup we've seen from a Seattle Mariners team in such a long time. And during the late 2000s, early 2010s, before those three guys got there, I mean, you were seeing 1-0 losses with Felix, you know, throwing eight innings and giving up one run and stuff all the time. And to have a middle of the order that was actually producing runs, Nelson was a huge part of that. And a big guy who had power to all fields, hit for a better average than I think anybody really expected. Yeah, those 4 years were incredible. And I think that he played such a big role in teams that were pretty close to making the playoffs, especially that 2018 season and a few seasons before. I think he has a very strong case of making it to the Mariners Hall of Fame just based on those 4 years alone.
Talking with Brandon Gustafson of ESPN 710 in Seattle, you mentioned Marco Gonzalez, who actually went to Gonzaga, came through the Cardinal system. He's only had two full seasons in the bigs with Seattle, won 29 games those 2 years, made all 34 starts last year. How are you feeling about him? It looks like he's clearly the ace, you know, now kind of growing into the role, fronting this staff.
I think that Marco had a way better year than people, I think, would expect, just thinking about soft-tossing lefty in today's game where it's all home runs and velocity and strikeouts and things like that. Got to 200 innings, I believe. He had, a 3.98 ERA finishing up. But the thing that I'm most excited about with him is how thrilled he is being the leader of that staff, because there's going to be a lot of young guys, the Justice Sheffields, Justin Dunns, with expanded rosters and the taxi squad and all that for 2020 and the unknown. You might see guys like Logan Gilbert and George Kirby up with the big league team, and he's the guy. He's the guy that they're going to go to know how to handle their business as a pro, and it's something that he's embracing. And I think that, even more so than necessarily just how good he's pitched the last 2 years, is the most exciting thing for me, and something that I think Mariner fans should really be looking forward to, and how he's helping those guys develop as pros, because he's a pro's pro.
Another interesting guy is Yusei Kikuchi. Came over from Japan, a rookie last year, experienced some growing pains, but I was reading about what he did in the offseason, altering his mechanics, and obviously you got to see him for about 20 minutes during the spring, but it looks like his velocity may be a little more consistent. What's the buzz about, you know, maybe him joining Gonzalez at the front of the rotation?
I think that would be a very good thing, especially because that was kind of the thought going into last season. He was in an off season ahead of 2019, where it seemed like everything was, you know, you're trading away all the big names. You're trading away a James Paxton, and you're letting Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz go to the Mets, and you let Nelson Cruz walk. Kikuchi was really the big signing, the only big acquisition that they did, and point blank, he had a bad year. He gave up so many home runs. His command was bad, but in the spring, he looked pretty sharp. I think his ERA was right around 4. He pitched about like 7 innings, but the command was better, and the velocity did seem to be up from all the reports that I heard. And another very important thing was his slider, which is his go-to. It sounds like he's throwing that a little more firm. It almost has a little more cutter action, and I think that could be really good for him to mix that in more as well. And I know they're hoping that he can kind of take a next step to potentially be somebody that's in the rotation for whenever that upswing in terms of the wins losses column happens. So yeah, I'm excited to see what he can do. It seemed like he was having a good spring, and I'm hoping that he can carry that over into the regular season, even if it's only 7, 8, 9 starts.
So I'd be remiss if, as a baseball guy, I didn't ask you. I mean, we know the negotiations, both sides were butchered, but now we know it's going to be 60 games, 66 days. We know they're going to play the West, and then they're going to play the NL West. Normal is out the window. So, Brandon, be a universal DH, runner on second to start, extra innings. You like the gimmicks of this unique season, or are you kind of like me? It's like, just put the games on and I'll watch. I'll take anything at this point.
There's definitely a part of that where I'm just like, give me live sports, man, please. It's been too long, right? It's like, since the Super Bowl, really, you know, there's been some NBA and NHL, but for a long time, it's just been like, man, what do I do? I mean, I was watching cornhole before the game trap started, for goodness sake. But the gimmicky stuff, I think that the universal DH in the NL, I think that that's a good move, and I think that that's probably something that's going to stay. The runner on second base thing, my first reaction to that is, that's something that when I was playing summer ball growing up, I would be at tournaments, and because there's so many teams but not enough fields, if a game went to extras, that's what they would have us do. So immediately I'm thinking like, oh great, it's like I'm 16 years old again. But no, I think that it'll be interesting to see how all that goes, and after how bad the negotiations just got butchered, I think that any sort of change might add a little more intrigue, just people wanting to see what's going to happen. And that's something that baseball desperately needs, as sports like basketball and NBA have been growing exponentially over the last decade plus. MLB's remained a little stagnant. And I think that anything that they can do to get more people watching, whether it's stuff like that, is good. Whether those kind of gimmicks stay for the future, it remains to be seen, but at least they're doing something.
You know, I don't have to tell you, 3 years ago, out of Kentucky, Seattle took Evan White in the first round, hit 300 at two different levels, had a big season last year in the Texas League, his power spiked a little bit, and kind of unique, they signed him to a long-term deal before he debuted in the big leagues. So from his glove at first to his stick, how high are they on him, and is the first base gig his as we speak?
I would be very surprised if it was not his, partly because the alternative is putting Daniel Vogel back at first base, and I think we would all agree that Evan White is going to do a much better job fielding first base than Daniel Vogel back. But the franchise is obviously very high on him, and they, I think, viewed him higher coming out of the draft than most people. I remember one of the scouting report things was kind of line drive hitter. Sometimes he'll chop it into the ground, but he's got good enough speed to kind of make it work. But he's definitely seen that uptick in power, and the Texas League is very, very pitcher-friendly, especially where the Mariners' AA affiliate is in Arkansas, and I think he had 18 home runs. That's super impressive, especially when you consider that his teammate, Kyle Lewis, played more games than him, I believe, and finished with 11 or 12. So the franchise has to be just salivating at the fact that, oh gosh, he's raking at this level, and that's some tough competition, and that's a tough place to hit. I think he'll be starting at first base from day one. I'd be shocked if he wasn't. And they have to be super excited. And they clearly were with that contract. We don't see it very often, guys getting deals before they play a single major league game. I mean, the guy never even played a game at AAA Tacoma. So it'll be really cool to see how he does. And I think that, especially in a year where it's going to be 60 games, yeah, get some of these guys some time, especially when there's not going to be minor league games and the only other stuff that they would be doing is that taxi squad, practice, inner squad stuff down in Tacoma.
A couple final thoughts for Brandon Gustafson, ESPN 710 in Seattle. Got to get to the Seahawks. You posted a story, I think today, about Mr. Trouble, Antonio Brown, and perhaps if there's an interest. So first, I guess we assume his eternal legal issues get straightened out. What are you hearing as far as how legit the interest is from Seattle and why they'd roll the dice on a guy like this?
Well, as far as why they would roll the dice, the guy's otherworldly talented. For a stretch, he was far and away the best receiver in football. Nobody was better at getting open, catching the ball, scoring touchdowns than Antonio Brown. So just from a pure talent perspective, of course, you would want that guy on your team. As far as why the Seahawks would be interested based on the trouble and stuff, it sounds like a lot of that is driven from both their quarterbacks, actually. Russell Wilson has worked out with him for a long time, and as you would expect, any quarterback is going to want to throw Antonio Brown the ball. The other thing is he's been working out with Geno Smith, who is Wilson's backup, and apparently he's been giving some good reviews to Pete Carroll and John Schneider and all the guys in the front office and the coaching staff. So there's definitely some legitimate interest there, and it makes sense that of the two teams that are interested would be Seattle, based on those relationships, and then Baltimore Ravens, because Antonio's from South Florida, so is quarterback Lamar Jackson, and his cousin Marquise Brown is a fellow receiver on the Ravens as well. As far as whether I think they'll roll the dice on him, ultimately I don't think so, and I think that that's something that would come more from higher up, like Jody Allen, who's now the principal owner of the team. And I think that they would be more inclined to try to bring back Josh Gordon and try to help him through the troubles that he's had with substance abuse versus trying to bring in someone like Antonio Brown, who's had issues that are way more serious and way more troubling than what Josh Gordon has gone through.
And lastly, I would say the once proud defense. I mean, you think Legion of Boom really dipped last year, and I think only Miami had less sacks than their 28. We know they did not re-sign Jadeveon Clowney. Benson Maioa from the Raiders came in. They brought back Bruce Irvin. And like you wrote, I guess the hope is LJ Collier lives up to that first-round status. How important and how likely is it you think the defense will be better starting with better production up front?
Yeah, and that's kind of where it all starts. And I think that looking at the team, it's been a little disappointing that maybe they didn't do more at pass rush. But then when you look back, you say, okay, Bruce Irvin and Benson Maioa, those were the two big free agent acquisitions on defense, combined 15 and a half sacks last year. That's more than half the amount that Seattle had. They had just 28, and like you said, only Miami was worse, and we know Miami was terrible overall as a team. But linebackers got better. Adding Jordan Brooks, that's going to be a really interesting part, and we've seen he can rush the passer at the college level too, so maybe they implement him a little bit there as well. If cornerback Quentin Dunbar can get his legal stuff situated and he's not suspended or missed time or anything, I think that that's an upgrade over Trey Flowers. Big question is going to be the base versus nickel. They played, I think, 70% base defense with three linebackers in an NFL that's going three receiver, four receiver sets so heavily. Whether Ugo Amadi or maybe even safety Marquise Blair line up at nickel more than they did last year remains to be seen. And like you mentioned, Jadeveon Clowney, that's the big name. He's still unsigned. Maybe going forward, they're able to clear up a little more space to bring him back. I'm still a little skeptical on the pass rush, but as far as the back end of that defense, I think they've gotten tremendously better.
Folks, he is Brandon Gustafson of 710 ESPN in Seattle on Twitter, at the B Gustafson. Hey, Brandon, great to get a chance to speak with you. Terrific information. Really appreciate your time, and wishing you and yours that you be well, you be safe, and absolutely looking forward to catching up again down the road once this all gets started again.
Absolutely. We're a little less than a month from games. Fingers crossed it stays that way. And yeah, likewise. Hope that you and your family are doing well.
All right. Thanks a lot, man. Have a good one. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
All right. There you go. Great stuff. Wired in.